This episode of Behind the Video is brought to you by the Independent Media Network. The Independent Media Network helps journalists and content creators create their own jobs by building sustainable online businesses. If you're an unemployed or underemployed journalist or content creator, visit imnct.com for more information. Hey everybody, welcome back to Behind the Video. This is episode number 89. We are closing in on the lucky 100, or maybe the not so lucky 100. Tim Street is not joining us this week from California because he is in Austin, Texas for South by Southwest. He has binged himself on ribs for his annual rib cleanse, which he does out there. So he couldn't join us this morning, but we do have a special guest with us and someone I've been excited to talk to. Ken Gagne, otherwise known as Game Bits, coming also from the East Coast, from the Boston area. Ken, how are you?
I'm fine, Lon. How are you?
Good. It's good to have you on the show. So you've got a YouTube channel that has been, I guess it was a happy accident, right? You have 23,000 subscribers. Did you ever expect you would be a YouTube star?
Absolutely not. It was a single video that I uploaded just thinking nobody would watch it, and it got a million views, and I decided to see, can I do this again, and it turned out it could.
And it was a gaming video, right?
Yeah, do you want the whole story?
Yeah, let's hear the whole story.
Well, it was the day of the Nintendo Wii U's release, which I think was November 18th of 2012, and I've always been a Nintendo fanboy. For about 10 years, I was a member of the video game industry as a journalist, but that was about 10 years ago. So I was driving home with the Nintendo Wii U, and it occurred to me that I had this brand new DSLR that I had just picked up for a trip to Peru, and I hadn't tested the video function yet, so I thought, let's do an unboxing video, something I learned about when I was an editor at Computer World magazine. So I went home, put my camera on a tripod, pointed it at the Wii U, opened it up, and then put the video online, figuring, okay, this is the day the system comes out, everybody's going to have one by now, nobody's going to care what an unboxing looks like, and I've never done one before, so it's probably not that good. And a few months later, I had a million views.
Isn't that crazy? And did you notice this happening, or did you just kind of log in one day and see that you had a million views on the video?
Well, I uploaded the video Sunday night, and Monday morning when I woke up, I checked my hit counter, and it said I had 301 views. And I'm like, that's pretty good. That's a couple hundred more than I expected.
Right.
And I forgot that 301 is where YouTube temporarily pauses the display of your video statistics while it tallies up all these amazing hits you're getting. So a couple hours later, it unpaused that counter, and it was at, you know, tens of thousands, and it just kept going.
Wow, that's amazing. And now you've got 23,000 subscribers.
Mm-hmm.
And so now you must feel some pressure now to kind of keep the content flowing to these people, right?
I do care about keeping content coming regularly. I'm not as concerned about necessarily giving the viewers the content they want, because I know a lot of people are into sports games or first-person shooters. A lot of Xbox One players are looking forward to Titanfall coming out this month.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But that's not really the kind of game that I'm all that into. And so I upload videos of games that I want to play as opposed to necessarily what the biggest and hottest games are. And it keeps me happy, and it seems to keep the subscribers coming too.
And I guess it's something you would be doing anyway, right? You're probably playing through. I see you're doing a lot with the new Super Mario Brothers game, so you're just kind of playing through that and recording as you go. Is that?
Exactly. You know, one of the reasons I kind of fell out of the gaming industry 10 years ago, there were a couple of reasons, but one was because there were so many other more productive ways to be spending my time, it felt like.
You know, like
going to school and getting a grad degree, or hosting a podcast that you've been on.
Right.
And when I sit down and play a game for an hour, I didn't often have something to show for it when I was done. But by doing a YouTube channel, I can say I'm not necessarily just playing games. I'm producing content. I have something to show for it. I have page views and subscribers and monetization that all occurs as a result of me spending an hour playing a game.
And it's amazing that people want to watch that, isn't it? Does that surprise you?
It does surprise me a little bit. I first learned of the Let's Play genre, which is where you play a game with audio commentary overlaid on it, from a friend of mine, actually, on the Open Apple podcast, the voice you hear at the beginning and end of the show. She's the one who first told me about Let's Plays, because she didn't necessarily enjoy playing games or was even very good at playing them, but she loved watching other people play them. So, you know, once her older brothers moved out of the house and she couldn't watch them, she turned to YouTube and found a proxy there with Let's Play videos. So I guess there is a niche I'm filling, either by people wanting to figure out how to beat the game, or people looking forward to getting the game for themselves and want to know what to expect, or just someone who wants something running in the background watching someone else playing it.
Yeah, it's kind of, I guess it can be therapeutic to some degree. See, I was the oldest sibling in the house, so I was always the game player, and my siblings would watch. So sometimes my parents too, because we had, limited televisions in the house to play these games on. But it's kind of funny. Now, there's been a lot of consternation out there regarding these Let's Play videos, right? Because now you've got 23,000 subscribers, you've got a number of videos over a million in change, so there is some revenue potential there, but lately, it's been getting more difficult, right? I mean, you haven't been able to monetize a lot of these.
Yeah, the Let's Play videos I don't do to monetize. I do those to keep the content flowing and to continue to build my audience so that when I do upload a video that can be monetized, I already have an audience built up to view it.
Oh, I see. It's interesting. So you've just kind of using this to kind of toss it out to your subscribers. And I guess if you even try to, Nintendo's been pretty tough about this, right?
Yeah, the ability to monetize a game is dependent on the publisher of the game. So Nintendo in particular, fans and players cannot monetize videos based on Nintendo games at all. However, Nintendo has taken the unusual step of saying that they can monetize those videos. So if you watch one of my Nintendo videos and you see an ad on it, I'm not the one making money off that. Nintendo is.
So, how does that make you feel?
I mean, I'm not too frustrated by it because,
You knew
like I
what you're
said,
getting into, right? You didn't have a whole bunch of stuff that they all of a sudden annexed from you, right? I mean, you knew going in that you're not going to be able to monetize these.
right. I mean, it's often the case, especially with big name publishers, that you can't monetize them at all. And the fact that Nintendo is monetizing it doesn't really change the game all that much. It is kind of a, I don't think it's very collaborative with their fans, to be honest. I think that a lot of the smaller indie publishers are more willing to collaborate with their fans and their critics, and I wish Nintendo had that, granular view as well.
Yeah, I mean, does it impact your content decision making as to what you're going to do? I mean, obviously, if you have something that you did want to monetize, it's not going to be a Nintendo video, I guess, right?
Well, it depends. For example, I did a video with the most frequently asked questions about the Sony PlayStation 4. And I uploaded that, and as a brief aside in that video, I had some footage from a Sony published game called Rizogun.
Okay.
And as a result of that, even though it wasn't the focus of the 10-minute video and it was only in there for about 30 seconds,
That's what they latched onto, huh?
exactly, and I was not
Wow.
able to monetize that video. So I took that video down, I recut it to eliminate that footage, I re-uploaded it, and then I was able to monetize it.
Have you talked to other gamers in this space? Because I've seen, when this gauntlet came down, it was pretty severe on a lot of them, especially those who had signed with multi-channel networks. And you and I get solicited all the time
Yes.
to join these networks, and we've talked about it. We've decided to remain independent.
That's
Damn it.
right.
We're going to start our own network. But we keep all the money. So, a lot of these people that were in these networks that were kind of protecting them from this suddenly lost that, along the way. I mean, are you talking to other gaming video makers, or what's their feeling on this? Because some of them are making a living off of this, and all of a sudden it's gone, right?
Right. I have reached out to a few such content producers, but I think they were too busy fighting that fight to talk
Right.
to me about the details. I, as you said, have been solicited by several multi-channel networks, and I did investigate one of them, got on the phone with them, and up front the terms of the contract sounded very attractive. But then I brought the contract to my lawyer, and he pointed out several hidden clauses that, in the end, instead of just taking the 10% revenue share that the contract implied, it was actually going to be more like 50 or 60%.
Wow, that's
Yeah, so,
excessive, substantial.
yeah, I mean, the math was variable, so I can't give you a hard, concrete
Right.
percentage, but it was more than I was willing to give up, especially based on how well I've done on my own so far. And if I was doing this full time and I needed that sort of backup to help me produce this content and get past those legal loopholes, that would be helpful. There are channels out there who are able to monetize content from the big name publishers because they have a multi-channel network legal team backing them up. But for me, who just does this on the side and mostly for fun and maybe a few dollars here and there, it wasn't worth giving up that much of my profit.
Right, you give up more than you might even take in. Because what I've seen with a lot of them is that I don't want to say that they've been predatory to necessarily, but they have gone after younger publishers, a lot of whom don't have a lot of views. But they build up this base level of these smaller channels that they're still taking 10, 20% off the top of their AdSense revenue, and then maybe giving them a share of what. Their sales generate, although it won't be all that much for those folks. It seems like it's a rather predatory practice. I mean, it's funny, as my channel's been going over the last year, I'm getting now more and more serious kinds of offers, and I'm sure you've probably had similar experiences.
Right.
But I have yet to see one that really works for me, and especially given now that the multi-channel network partners are having the same issues you're dealing with independently, it doesn't seem like it's all that interesting there. Is there a limit to how many gaming channels can come out? I mean, it's shocking to me just, you know, how many views are out there for gaming content, especially for things you would never expect, right?
Yeah, it does baffle me how people find my channel, and admittedly the smaller Let's Play videos I upload only get maybe 1,000 views each, but then I have those larger videos that get 1 million each. I think my secret to attracting an audience to those videos was that when I published the first one about the Wii U, I was an editor at Computer World magazine. I am now a freelance writer for Computer World, and that gives me access to their blog area where I can upload and write my own content and publish it there. So I always put my unboxing videos in a Computer World blog post. Computer World gets indexed by Google News,
right,
and that gives me some nice hits on my SEO.
Right, so you see probably some audience, there's a projection a little bit that you're able to get out in front of more people initially. It seems like the way this works is that the longer people watch for, the better the SEO value. So if you can get more people watching, that can grow. And now with a rather large subscriber base, it seems that's the kind of the direction that it takes. Now, your interests are varied tremendously. So,
as are yours, sir.
Yes, they are. And, you know, when I started on YouTube many moons ago, just kind of fooling around with it, I had my channel that just had all the junk that I was doing just lobbed in there. So let's let our viewers know that you're more than just a gaming guy. You are, among many other hats, a retro computing enthusiast, specifically around the Apple II computer, and your podcast Open Apple is quite popular amongst that community. So you've set up like different channels for different things, right? So why don't you talk about that? I mean, how do you differentiate your audiences in that way?
Well, as far as YouTube goes, I have just the one video channel, and that's strictly about video games.
Mm-hmm.
A while back, YouTube required that I create a Google Plus page for my YouTube account, and I've initially tried associating that with my personal page because I was trying to minimize the number of identities I had to manage.
Right.
My fans didn't really cotton to
that. A.K.A. Ken Gagne, A.K.A. this, that, and the other.
Exactly.
Thing, right? Right.
But when my GameBits channel suddenly became the Ken Gagne channel, a lot of my viewers said, "Who's this guy? You know, Ken Gagne doesn't mean games to us. GameBits means games." And so it was still within a grace period where I could undo that connection, I could sever it, and then create a new GameBits page on Google+. My podcast is audio only, so that's not on YouTube. That is found at open-apple.net, and that's in iTunes. It's pretty much the only identity I have in iTunes. My video game content isn't available there. And then I have a website, which is probably in desperate need of a redesign, called gamebits.net. And that is becoming a repository for all my Let's Plays as well. But as you know, people don't go looking for independent content creators in their own homes. They look for them on YouTube.
They do, absolutely. Yeah. And that's been, I when I started doing the gadget reviews, I bought a domain, I had a WordPress site set up, and I was spending, we were just talking right before the show about how I've stopped wasting time on things that don't get watched.
Exactly.
And the website was just not getting anything. I was like, why am I bothering with this? It takes more time to post it on the website than not. So, I mean, do you feel nervous about, and I guess, you know, for us it's a little bit different because this is not our primary source of income, but, you know, I feel like I should be doing more outside of YouTube to promote what I'm doing, but I just don't have the time, and I'm just concerned that, you know, we've put all our eggs in this basket, right? I mean, what happens when YouTube decides they don't like us anymore, right?
well, at least as far as my kind of videos go, Vimeo does not allow Let's Play videos or any other sort of gameplay footage.
Mm.
So I can upload my unboxing videos there, since that is filmed with a handheld camera and I'm in front of the camera. But as far as actually hooking up my Nintendo to the TV or to the computer and recording that, Vimeo is not the home for that.
Interesting. So YouTube is probably the only game in town. Daily Motion's been getting friendlier for this kind of stuff. Have you thought about Daily Motion?
I haven't looked into Daily Motion. I've looked into Twitch and Ustream for live performances of my games, but that doesn't really work for me either, because even though my Let's Plays, they're what's considered a blind Let's Play, I've never played the game before, so I'm not necessarily showing you how to beat it.
Okay.
Nonetheless, some of these levels that I'm playing these games are much more challenging than I expected, and I die a lot. And so I don't subject my viewers to that. Before I upload that video to YouTube, I'll go delete the 10 minutes of deaths. And
I see.
And in the video, you'll hear, okay, I just deleted 10 minutes of video. Now you're going to actually see me get through everything that was killing me before.
Do you think there's a market for older gamers like ourselves being like just not being very good at playing these games and getting ridiculed by people that weren't even born when Tetris came out?
You know, and that's not a kind of video I'd considered. Instead of a let's play, I guess that would be a let's fail. just showing all. I mean, I have some friends who are not that great at games. Maybe I could secretly record them, but
yeah, right. Maybe do something like that.
I have reached out to some other YouTube content creators about some collaborations, and I've gotten some very engaged and interested responses. So we're trying to work that out. I hope to have something coming up in the next month, and that will just really be an experiment. But yeah, there is the opportunity there, even in something as structured as a let's play, to do something creative.
As your viewership is growing, I mean, I know you mentioned that you don't necessarily do things that your audience perhaps is looking for, but things that you find interesting. Do you
Right.
feel pressured now to keep pumping content out? Because I'm at the point now where, you know, I monetize all my product review videos, and I'm at the point now where if I don't have something scheduled to go up at least like every other day, I feel like I'm like not doing what I need to be doing. And it hasn't yet invaded other parts of my life yet, thankfully. But you know, I'm at the point where I'm like, I gotta keep cranking out content. I got stuff piling up. I gotta get this stuff done. Do you feel pressure to now play games? Does it feel like work ever now that you've got all these people watching and you want to keep putting content up?
Some of the pressure is there, but it's primarily comes from me. Sometimes I'll have a commenter say, when's the next video coming up? And I'll just tell them this weekend. And they'll say, great, looking forward to it, but that's it. I think some of the pressure from me is just to finish the game because I want to finish one game before moving on to another.
Right.
And so, for example, at the end of this month, a game called Shovel Knight is coming out that I really want to play. I still haven't finished Super Mario Bros. 3D World, and I need to finish that game before I start Shovel Knight. The other thing I use to balance the pressure is that I try to play only games that have come out in the last 3 to 6 months.
Okay.
And I'm much farther behind in my games than I am 3 to 6 months. So, for example, they just announced the fourth Batman game is coming out later this year.
I didn't even know there was three other ones.
There was Batman Arkham Asylum, Batman Arkham City, Batman Origins, and then I forget what the fourth one is called. That's coming out later this year. And I still haven't played the first one. So when I eventually do get around to playing that game, I'm not going to be recording that. That'll just be for me. And that'll be a nice way to balance my Let's Play videos.
You know, one of the things that I've seen, and what actually inspired me to focus my YouTube channel a little bit more was the retro gaming community. And I've been finding myself watching hours and hours of retro gaming content, even because you know what it is, I have no time to play games anymore. And you have the same problem. Like it's like we have such narrow windows here, you know. And I've been watching a lot of these retro games be reviewed and you know creatively and otherwise, and it's just been you know kind of a fascinating thing. It's more of a nostalgic kind of approach to modern gaming, I guess. But as my time has decreased, I've spent less of it actually playing games and more just about learning more about the history and the story behind them, because there's so much out there now. We've got like 30 years worth of video game history now. It's amazing, and the stuff still works, and everybody can access it, which I think is just wonderful. Whether it's legal or not is another story, but it's kind of neat.
Well, a lot of older games are especially available through legal means for download to your modern console. So, for example, I recently picked up Contra 3, which was originally a Super Nintendo game, now available on the Wii U Virtual Console or the eShop. And I had played that game to death as a kid, and every couple of years I go back to it and just go through the motions. I still know how to beat it. It's just rote, but it's comforting as well. And so I decided to put that on YouTube, and I uploaded it saying, I know this game is 20 years old, and it's probably been let's played to death already on YouTube, but I want to do my own take. And one of my commenters, Gaming Media, he wrote back and said, don't ever think that you don't have anything unique to contribute, because as you're playing this game, you're overlaying it with commentary about your own memories of growing up playing that game, and that's unique to you.
Right.
So you always have something to contribute, no matter what game it is or how old it is.
Right. People find value in that analysis, too, of that content. So I've been doing some gadget reviews of old stuff that I have laying around the house. I had an old 3DO, which is the old game console there.
Sure, I had one of those.
And it was the comments and the interaction. I didn't get a lot of views necessarily, but some of the interaction from folks was just like, oh, I remember that, or I remember looking at that in the store. I could never buy one, and it's so cool to see it. And then, you know, so it kind of developed a whole new relationship with my audience around something that may not be of interest to a lot of folks, but maybe enough to have some discussion there. So it's pretty cool. So Well, that's cool. I mean, it's I really thank you for coming on, because we've been talking a lot about gaming lately and just some of these challenges that folks have had monetizing. And it seems like, you know, the pressure to produce is there, but not necessarily the pressure to make a lot of money, because your expectations have been set accordingly there. You're not making your living off of that. But it's been I guess it's tough, right? I mean, is it frustrating to keep seeing these things pop up and have to react to them? You know, these content ID notifications and everything?
To a degree. For what it's worth, I've never actually had a video taken down. Mm-hmm. I've just had notices saying that this is copyrighted by somebody else and you can't monetize it. Right. Two pieces of advice I'll give to content creators who do want to monetize YouTube videos or gameplay videos. One is that there is a wiki called wholetsplay.com. That lists all the publishers out there of both major titles and indie titles and who will let you monetize videos of their games, and it has a link to the license that allows you to do that, so that when YouTube comes back to you and says, who gave you permission to monetize this video, you say, the publishers did, and here's the link where they said so.
Well, that's great. That's a really helpful tool.
Yeah, it is. I think my friend Dane Nieder pointed me to that. And then another piece of advice I have is there are a lot of publishers who are not on that list, not because they prohibit monetization, but because they've never encountered that situation before. They're indie developers, and they've never been asked this question before. So earlier I mentioned Shovel Knight. That's being produced by Yacht Club Games. I backed their Kickstarter last year. And so on Kickstarter, I emailed them, and I said, will you be allowing monetization of gameplay videos of Shovel Knight when it comes out later in March? And they said, sure. We don't have a problem with that. And so I wrote back and said, great. Do you have a license detailing that somewhere on your website? And they said, oh, we didn't realize that was necessary. We never considered that. And so I worked with them, and I showed them this wiki, and now they do have a link on their website that says we give blanket permission to monetize any video featuring any of our content, which is including but not limited to reviews, let's plays, commentaries, speed runs, long runs, whatever.
Wow, cool. That's neat. So that I think to some extent it's actually more helpful that people can more define what the rights relationship is for each game. And you know, those developers who want to let people do it will probably get a lot more traffic as a result of that. So
I hope so.
That's cool. Well, Shovel Knight looks pretty cool. A little retro-inspired game there. So
yeah, very much like Mega Man.
Pretty cool. I'm going to check that one out, actually. Put that on my list of games to never play. I'll do my best. So, hey, you got a few minutes to stick around and talk about some news?
Absolutely.
All right. Well, we're going to go into the news. And if you want to find Ken, by the way, Game Bits on YouTube. Can't miss him. And you can see all his millions of views on his unboxing videos. And he doesn't even keep some of the stuff. He just unboxes it and sells it, right?
I've only done that on a few occasions. Those were times when I did bow to my audience's expectations. But primarily, it is stuff that I am interested in.
Yeah. Right. So it often stays put in the TV room there, then, I guess, right?
Right. And also, I do read every single comment that's put on any of my videos. I have my settings set up so that I get an email for every comment. And you would think that would just destroy any faith I have in humanity, reading that many YouTube comments.
Right.
But the community is actually pretty interested. If they're watching a video about Super Mario Brothers, chances are they're interested in Super Mario Brothers and they want to know more. They're not just there to troll. I've only had maybe one instance in the last year and a half where there was really a persistent bully who would not go away.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I've seen very similar things as well, that my commenters have been 98% positive. Or maybe they disagree with something, but they're not being jerks about it. You know, they're offering a rather reasoned disagreement with me on something. And I think that's good, and it's been excellent. I do the same thing. I get every time any interaction happens on my channel, I've now filtered them into their own little folder on my Gmail account, because I was getting... Yeah, you know, the subscriber notifications were starting to stack up a little bit more, which is good. I'm really excited about it, but I need to like not get distracted by it when I'm working on stuff. So
yeah, there was one video I created almost specifically to troll my audience, and that was, I think, 5 or 10 things I hate about the PlayStation 4.
Oh, red meat.
And at the very end of the video, I put up that black and white line drawing of the troll face.
Yep.
And so sort of a hint at what I was getting at, and I'm not sure many people did, but I have purposely not read any comments on that one video, just because I really don't want to get into any flame wars, even though I put that video up. So that was just a little bit of fun I was having.
That's cool. Well, you can do that and get a little bit of a rise out of them when you want. So that's
good stuff. I have found that one of the best ways to attract an audience, at maybe not in my own experience, but in others, is to upset them. You know, I mean, this is how Howard Stern became popular on radio.
Right.
And
mm-hmm.
a few months ago, I went to a talk at Northeastern University in Boston by Anita Sarkeesian, who runs the YouTube channel Feminist Frequency. I was there with Bob Chipman, who goes by Movie Bob at escapistmagazine.com, and he was uploading tweets and photos about the talk, and he was just getting so much hate in response because Anita Sarkeesian is a very polarizing figure.
Right.
And so as soon as Bob saw that this is what his tweets were getting, he said, oh, I'm definitely going to go home and write a story about this.
Right, let's get this fire stoked, right?
Right, and so yeah. he uploaded that story to Escapist Magazine. He got hundreds of comments on it, and you know that was great for traffic.
And that's what it is. I mean, it comes down to the negativity effect. People like to have, like to argue, especially when they feel very strongly about something. And I found like some of the things, I'll give something a negative review or maybe be critical of something, and the comments I get are unbelievable. Like the passion people might have for a product that I could give two rats
right.
about. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it's just, it's incredible just how people get worked up about this stuff, which is good. You know, I mean, if it draws attention, I mean, every time they come back to debate each other, they're watching the video again. That's fine with me.
Yeah.
So that's
not something I set out to do that often. In
mm-hmm.
fact, when I do have somebody leaving a negative comment on one of my YouTube videos, I try to engage them without being either defensive or offensive. Like somebody said, what kind of an idiot are you treating your Xbox like that, banging it all around, getting it scratched up? You know, and I could have been really defensive and said, oh, well, it's my Xbox. I can do whatever I want with it.
Right.
What do you care? But instead, I just wrote back and I said, my Xbox likes it rough. You know, and they wrote back and they laugh and they say,
yeah.
you just got a new subscriber.
Right, exactly. So sometimes they're not expecting a response. They think you're, you know, some huge celebrity that doesn't have time for them. right. It's we're in the age now. I forgot who coined this term of the middle class celebrity,
know,
where you can have a huge audience, but you're really not making the money that you might have at one point in life. So it's pretty funny stuff.
Yeah, we're certainly not being recognized walking down the street either.
No, which maybe is a good thing because you can still maintain your anonymity. So,
right.
Although it's funny though, I occasionally will have people come out to, you know, people that I know who say, "Wow, we were searching for something and your video popped up." You know,
I've had that happen too. Yeah,
right. Isn't that wild? And they don't even know that you're doing it, and it's like, whoa! I had no idea you were doing all this stuff. I'm like,
yeah,
I had one
person. He was listening to a video on YouTube. He must have jumped in the middle at one point because then he thought to himself, "Wait a minute, that voice sounds familiar." And he scrolled back to the beginning. He's like, "Oh my God, it's Ken."
Yeah, no, it's funny because I don't tell a lot. I mean, I don't, you know, advertise to everybody I know that I do this. It's just something that I've just started doing, and it's become a part-time job for me. And
right.
And people find it, and it's funny. Like at least once or twice a month, I'll get a call from somebody I haven't heard from in a while. Like, oh my God, I can't believe you're doing this. So it's great stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So speaking of viewership, we have the YouTube charts of the week, and what we do, Ken, is we go through the top five viewed channels that are kind of independent or not run by Vevo or one of those. You know, other music channels, because music
right.
tends to kind of knock our top 10 around a little bit.
Sure.
So number one, and I talk about her every week, so I'm not going to go into horrible detail here, but it's the Disney Collector. And I don't know if you've seen what she does, Ken, but she takes Disney toys out of the box and shows you how they work.
So are these unboxing videos then?
Essentially, yeah, for Disney toys. And 45.3 million views last week.
Wow.
Wow is right.
Yeah, she has over 1 million subscribers and over 1.5 billion views total.
Yeah. Isn't that insane? And you would never know. And she's independent, so she's not part of any multi-channel network. I'm sure she's asked about that quite often. But completely independent. I think she's got a great audience because I think it's kids and their parents who tune in to maybe see what this toy looks like before they go and buy it. So huge, huge traffic there.
Now, how can you tell that she's independent and that she doesn't belong to a network?
A Tube Filter has in their listings, they have their charts of the week.
Okay.
And next to each one, they'll list whether or not they're affiliated with a multi-channel network. So just about everybody, especially in our top five, is, or they're part of, you know, some major television network. But she's one of the few that have been, you know, in that top list without any affiliation. So it's proof that you can grow without having to sign up necessarily if you're not comfortable with that. So pretty cool stuff. Shortly behind her is a up-and-comer, Late Night with Jimmy Fallon, 38 million views. So those late night shows, I actually don't watch any late night shows at late night anymore because I value my sleep now with a baby in the house. So
right.
I watch it all on YouTube in the morning in little snippets. So,
well,
so
Is that the channel where he's doing music videos using classroom toys?
Yes. Yep. He's doing that. A lot of the gigs he was doing on his old show, and now, of course, he's got the old Johnny Carson gig. So he's been doing that stuff now, you know, on there, and that's an NBC affiliated network, of course. So it's you know, it's part of NBC's umbrella, but it's doing quite well, and it's and you know, it drives views, but back and forth between the real show, you know, on the air and the YouTube channel, because people, you know, may want to send something to a friend or whatever. So 38
right.
million views. Johnny Carson's show is on YouTube also. They've been slowly posting little snippets of some of the funnier moments of Johnny Carson over the years, and full episodes with commercials occasionally will pop up on there.
Oh,
as
wow.
well. Yeah, it's pretty cool. Doesn't get the kind of viewership that Jimmy Fallon is getting, but if you want to watch a master at work, tune in for that, because he really defined what being a good late-night talk show host is. Another talk show on our list is number three, The Ellen Show, with 27 million views.
Mm-hmm.
That speaks for itself. The Fine Brothers, they pop on and off. They're pretty you know, agile YouTube stars, so they're in at 22.7 million this week. They must have had something hit the they have a good hit on their hands. Occasionally they'll come up with a video that really gets a lot of views very quickly. A lot of times people like come on the list and then drop off very quickly because they had some, you know, some viral video go crazy and then it just kind of dissipates.
The
great example was the Volvo ad with Vin Diesel there doing the split on the trucks.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they were in there for like about 2 weeks and then they dropped off because, you know, how many times can he do that?
Wait, was that Vin Diesel or was that Jean-Claude Van Damme?
Maybe it was Van Damme. I think it was Van Damme. You're right. It was one of those two guys. I always get them mixed up.
And then there was a Chuck Norris spoof where he did a split between two airplanes.
That's right. Chuck Norris can do it all. He's the man's man. WWE Fan Nation came in at 22 million. So what amazing how the WWE continues to print money after all of these years. So
truly.
Pretty remarkable stuff. A couple bit of news items, and before we've got to take off, because I know you've got to go somewhere, and my baby is crying, and she's up from her nap a little bit early, so only got a half hour out of her. Machinima lays off 42 employees as they restructure their sales team, and that's you know, these networks are very volatile in my mind.
Yeah.
I mean, they're heavily leveraged. You know, it's a tough environment for them. So they are laying off some employees. I guess they're going to restructure their sales team there, according to TubeFilter. South by Southwest is going on right now. You ever been to South by Southwest?
I've not.
I have not either. Tim is there, so next week we're going to get the lowdown from Tim on what's going on. But
excellent.
There's a lot of content creators meeting up there. There's a meetup, actually, I think it was on Tuesday, or maybe coming up this Tuesday, for people to catch up with each other on that. And PewDiePie, talking about pressure. Now, do you know PewDiePie?
Yeah, he's the number one channel on all of YouTube.
And he's a gamer, right? He's like doing stuff that you're doing.
Let's play videos, reaction videos. That's his niche.
And he's got a bro army. You don't have a bro army, do you?
Not yet.
You should get one because he's got a huge following. He's making a boatload of money, I'm sure. However, he's saying he's got to scale it back a little bit. He's having a hard time keeping up. And I've been hearing this from a lot of top YouTubers that there's a lot of pressure involved with you know, feeding the beast here, and he's like looking at it saying, well, I'm the top channel. He's probably making more off his old stuff than he is off his new stuff, so he's going to scale back some of his activity a little bit to kind of, you know, catch his breath a little bit, you know, so maybe not quite the Justin Bieber retirement, but...
Right. Well, that's one of the nice things about building a library of content is that even as you upload new videos, your old videos continue to generate revenue.
And I think that's really important to have the evergreen kind of content, right?
Mm-hmm. You know, so my Wii U video, for example, I uploaded that November of 2012, and then from during the holiday season 2013, a year later, it got big again, and it started getting all these views because people were interested in buying it for Christmas, or they were finding links to it from my Xbox and PS4 videos.
Right.
So all this old stuff, it's still out there generating revenue for you.
Now, interesting. That is interesting. So, and I've noticed that too, that, you know, a lot of times I'll put a video up, it'll get some viewership maybe from the subscriber base, you know, and then it kind of sits there, and then a month later the search engine kicks in.
Yep.
And you'll see huge traffic. Some stuff that I've done a year or two ago is still collecting money for me, so really good
right.
stuff. And I'm sure with his volume, he's probably like, you know what, I could retire right now and just live off the royalties here. So Pretty cool stuff there. In the movies this week, number 5 was Son of God. You can't go wrong with religious movies, right? So the Bible's still the most published book in the world. So that came in at $9.7 million, number 5 on our list this week, $42 million overall. The Lego movie, have you seen this?
I have. It's fantastic.
So I keep hearing that. So as soon as my baby's old enough to go to the movies, we'll see the Lego movie too, probably. Undoubtedly, there'll be a sequel because they've already banked $225 million, $12 million in ticket sales this weekend alone. Nonstop action film, $52 million to $54 million overall, $17 million this weekend. A retro remake, Mr. Peabody and Sherman, $30 million this weekend, Ken.
Not my thing, thanks.
Yeah, I wasn't into that. Even as a kid, I wasn't too big on that. And then 300, Rise of an Empire, another hack and slash ancient war movie, kind of just rinse and repeat kind of thing, right? Mm-hmm. $44.2 million. So have you found as you've aged, your tastes in movies have changed?
Actually, not too much. I think the films that I liked as a kid are still pretty good. I just rewatched Goonies over Thanksgiving, and certainly it has a different appeal now, but still a fun movie.
Mm.
I'm looking forward to seeing the Muppets movie when it comes out later this month, and I sure would have loved that when I was in, you know, grade school or high school.
Right. Yep. Yeah, I used to love action movies as a teenager, and now I just can't watch them anymore.
Yeah, you know, I just saw the new Dread film with Carl Urban.
Yep.
And you know, first of all, it was noticeably improved over the predecessor for not having any Rob Schneider. But still, it wasn't the film I was hoping it would be. And maybe this is showing my age, but I thought it was really violent.
You know, that's exactly for me, too. It's just like, I can't watch it. It just doesn't appeal to me. It's just not...
That's it.
Not my thing anymore. You know, maybe it's when you move in, along in life, your interests change. Even the violent video games. I used to... You know, occasionally play with those shoot 'em up games and stuff, but just, you know, they're all the same to me. I don't know what it is. I mean, the graphics get better and the technology improves, but I've been drawn, like you are, to the Nintendo stuff, which is more creative than violent necessarily. So
yeah, I'm also really interested in video games as a narrative medium. So the Walking Dead game that the Telltale studio did is amazing. And several years ago, Silent Hill, I think it was called Shattered Memories for the Nintendo Wii. Yeah, for the Wii. That was a game that featured no combat whatsoever. There were no weapons, and you couldn't fight the monsters. All you could do was run away from them. And that was one of the scariest video games I have ever played, because you were so helpless.
Right, yeah.
And that was a really creative choice that the creators made.
And that might be something our video producers watching or listening can take some heart in, that you know, there probably is some value to doing things differently than everyone else is doing, and finding ways to creatively do that and define your genre differently. Last bit of news here. BBC, as you know, is funded by the UK government, but they are threatening, at least the management there, threatening to move more things off the air and onto the internet because their public money is declining rapidly. So that's according to The Hollywood Reporter. And we're seeing similar threats in America, not over funding necessarily, but because of the Aereo case. You have Aereo in Boston, right? Have you tried it?
I'm sorry, I'm not sure I know what that is.
So Aereo is a service where you basically lease, quote-unquote, an antenna from this company, and then you can stream what that antenna receives over the internet. And what they do is they set up these banks of, like, thousands of antennas for their customers in each city. And you're able to get your network television without a cable subscription or even an antenna of your own. And they found some loophole in federal law that makes this apparently not illegal, but it's now going to the Supreme Court. And the broadcasters are threatening that if they lose in the court or if Congress doesn't do something to stop this, they're going to stop putting things on the air because they feel like they're losing revenue from it.
Wow, I completely missed this. That's fascinating.
Yeah. It's a fascinating thing. It's been going on in the courts for some time now, and now it's headed to the Supreme Court. The Justice Department on that case actually has sided with the broadcasters, not with Aereo. So so a little less free internet from the Obama administration again, but what are you going to do? It's fascinating stuff. So we'll see where this case leads, but it seems like similar issues in Great Britain as well. So, well, I've got a screaming child I've got to go to attend to, Ken. Life is once again intersecting in my online world. Where can people find you and all the things that you do? Is there a single place, or should we direct them to a few different places?
KenGagne.com lists all my various social media presences, and then there's YouTube.com/GameBits, Twitter.com/GameBits. Those are probably the best places to reach me as far as the gaming content I produce goes.
Great. And you've got a little conference you've got going on in Kansas City, right? Or the
yep.
Kansas Fest. And
yep.
Every year for the Apple II enthusiasts. That has been growing, hasn't it?
Yeah. Attendance is up. This is an Apple II conference that's held in Kansas City every July at Rockhurst University. You can find it at kansasfest.org. I'm not involved in the organization. I'm just an attendee, but I've been going for about 17 years now. It's fantastic. We've had keynote speakers like John Romero, Bob Bishop, Steve Wozniak. It's a great time. And as speaking of conferences, I will be at PAX East next month in Boston, the Penny Arcade Expo. I will be presenting a panel on the portrayal of women in video games, and the role. The title of the panel is called "Sex, Sexy, and Sexism: Fixing Gender Imbalance in Gaming." I'm actually just as you're heading off to deal with your screaming child, I'm heading off to meet some of my panelists for lunch and have a little strategy meeting about what topics we're going to be discussing.
Excellent. Well, that sounds really cool. So I wish I was going to PAX to check that out, because we've never met in person, and we should at some point. So
I agree. We should.
We will have to arrange that at some point. And but thank you so much for joining us this week, because our co-host was off in South by Southwest enjoying all that barbecue out there. But we will be back next week. We record the show every Sunday morning at 11:30 a.m. Eastern, 8:30 a.m. Pacific. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher. You name the podcast thing, you will find us there. So hit that subscribe button. You'll get a new episode every week. And thank you again, Ken, for joining us. And we are a wrap.
Stories for this episode were compiled by producer Jason Perrier. Follow him on Twitter at JasonPerrier. Behind the Video is a production of Ape Digital Incorporated and the Independent Media Network, LLC. All rights reserved.